Welcome to the show, everybody. We are slowly but surely becoming more Canadian week by week. We add one Canadian and suddenly within a span of 3 weeks, we have two Canadian guests. So I'll take the blame for this one, though, because this is someone I've been really wanting to have on the show for a while that I've been very excited to get to know more than just through an Instagram. But today we have David from Rabbit Hole Roasters out of Montreal, am I right? Or the yes. Montreal area?
Yeah, exactly. I do live in Montreal, but we roast in a small city called Delson. But we've been there for just about like a year now.
That's awesome. Yeah, so David, what's up? How are you doing?
Everything's good. Just wrapping up the weekend, chatting with you nice coffee folks, wrapping up everything. So I'm super thrilled to be here. And yeah, it's good to meet just like outside of the Instagram, like on another platform and like actually chat with people. So that's great.
Yeah, it's always cool to like, it's one thing to see people, like you might see their face once in a while or just like maybe you know their Instagram based off the icon and the name, but it's cool to like sit down and have an actual conversation and remember that behind every Instagram, there's actual real people. And, you know,
yeah,
so it's cool and it's nice. To see.
And it's nice to see the real people because when people change their like IG picture and like it's over, you know, there's no coming back from that.
Definitely. So where are you recording right now, would you say?
Right now, I'm just at home in Montreal. I'm in my basement. I'm glad it's not videotaped that way because it's a mess here. It's my coffee bar. So I'm in the basement where all my coffee gears are. Kids have been sleeping for like 30 minutes or something, folded a bit of laundry, and now I'm drinking instant decaf, like I said, while you enjoy really nice coffee. So
yeah, right. I totally get the whole thing with the background because in my background, I always have my messy living room. Like,
yeah.
Me and my wife, it's our messiest area of the house, so it's always like crazy back there. So I'm very glad this is not seen by anyone besides our Patreon supporters. But what's this like last week been like for you? What's been kind of on your radar lately?
On the radar lately, I've been wrapping up pretty much, I'd say like probably 95% of my green coffee contracts for like the full next 12 months. Like this is super busy season to just book everything. And when we started Rabbit Hole, I was kind of going with the flow, doing a lot of like spot coffee. I would just call an importer, see what they had in stock. They would send samples. But to have kind of a greater impact, I really like doing forward contracts and work with the same people harvest after harvest. So to do this, there's just like a little bit more planning, a little bit more logistics, but it's really, really worth it. So just finalized Nicaragua, finalized our biggest origin that is actually China, Yunnan Coffees. But this is the chain that took us like, anyway, about like 2 months to finalize because the rules and regulation and how to like pay them and how they distribute the money to farmers is like one of the craziest origin to deal with, especially for the importer in the States, which is Atlas Coffee, really cool folks there. And just finalizing all the contracts, making sure that we're buying tasty coffees, but also like kind of with a purpose. And we've really been trying to do in the past like 3 months, really dive deep in our motto that's kind of beyond coffee. So we really like to do things that are going to impact kind of communities and just be kind of like a little bit like activist in a way, like just talk about non-coffee related stuff as well. Just like we just did a couple of posts about like Juneteenth, about what's happening in Palestine and all that. So just trying to use our platform as well. So that's another thing that we've been really working on the last little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It's a busy week.
It was kind of a busy week.
Yeah, getting stuff done. Yeah. That's awesome.
Here's the deal, guys. David, look, I know that you're nice and I know that you say sorry a lot because you're Canadian. But here on the Socialist Barista podcast, we talk about stuff that grinds our burrs.
Okay.
Stuff that really gets us. You know, like in that peak grinder level K30 just, you know, trying to have a conversation and it's just on. Grinds my burrs, you know? And let me tell you something, guys. I'll start this out, all right? What grinds my burrs happened like my last day at Quizera, and it is discount imposters. And you know what I'm talking about. It's people that come up, that college student that comes up or somebody like that. It's like, yeah, like me and the manager, like we're like best friends. I'm like, great. That's awesome. Yeah, he usually like, I think there's like a discount, like a friend's discount. And I'm like, yeah, no. Or they do stuff. One person in my life, like people that just come in entitled people, like the discount entitled people, like I know somebody. Whoop-de-doo. I work here and I still have to pay, nearly full price when I get coffee when I'm not working. But they come in and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I know, like, you know, I know the manager, I know the owner. I'm like, that's awesome. I know him too, really well. But they just push. And then when you don't give them the discount, they keep digging. And you're like, hey, I'm sorry, but this isn't an argument. I don't want to be
it's
that
not
person.
Going anywhere.
The worst time is like when you like want to get rid of a discount and you can't because it's like too late. It's already like people just expect it. It's like I've worked at places with neighborhood discounts and you're like, okay, like we're probably going to not do that one anymore. And when you stop doing it, breaking that news to somebody is the hardest thing you've ever done. You're like, I'm sorry, but your discount no longer exists.
Oh, yeah. But I've had that before.
It grinds my burrs, man. The entitled discounter people that are like, I should get this discount or I can get this discount. It's like, hey, sorry.
Uh-uh.
That's not happening. You're not getting a free drink unless I'm flirting with you, which I'm not. So I'm kidding. That's a joke. nobody take me to the bank on that. But what, Nick, what's you got to tell us this week? Because you're usually the person that's got a grindy burr. Let me tell you.
I do. And it's always the custies. They're grinding me the wrong way. Something that really has been bugging me lately, and it's happened twice in the last week, which is why it's been on my radar, is, you know, I get a few calls at the shop in a day, and people just ask, like, what time are you open till? And I recognize this one guy's voice. And I told him what time we were open till, 5:30, no biggie. And I didn't realize that people inquire about opening hours just to see how much they can push it coming in. I'm talking people coming in 10 minutes to close. They've got a group of five. They're hoping to sit in and have a good old chat, and they're like, and then you can hear them, no, they don't close until 5:30, don't you worry. And I'm like, these guys really are just trying to push it as close as they possibly can until close. And you already know, I have my trick. I raise the music volume a little bit extra until it's like 10 minutes to close and then cut it off.
Yep.
So it's like so awkward for them. And then they're sitting in silence. Get out of my shop.
That's like Trey playing hardcore rap, like ridiculously hardcore rap.
Closing time.
I've never done that.
We did it. I did it one time when we were working together. Remember, I played like literally like just the most 90s rap I could, and I turned it up really loud.
I don't remember.
You don't remember that?
No.
It was pretty funny. People definitely in that coffee shop were like, I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
That's great. I haven't been a barista in a while, but we just used to blast music all the time. And we had like a warning song that would change. That was like soft hip hop, kind of loud. Yeah. And then we would switch to like a Kendrick Lamar song that I know you want spicy content from a Canadian, but I cannot sing those lyrics because they're very explicit. Yeah. And people would get out that shop really quick. It was great.
Good.
I remember, Trey, you might not remember this, but we had a thing here in Lexington called Burger Week, where all these places have $5 burger specials for these special, like, you know, special recipes they make for this week. And it's a big thing to go for lunch and dinner to these places. And we went to this one place that had, it was a really fancy place. Actually, ironically, it was called Sage and the Rabbit. But they play the really sad Sarah McLachlan song in the Arms of an Angel when they were trying to close. And it was so loud and so depressing that we were like, oh, I think it's time to leave. I think they're closing.
It's hard to eat a burger when that song's playing.
Yeah, you're eating a burger, and then your mind is going to all these really sad dogs that are stuck in shelters and shivering for dear life.
I remember Trey getting really mad at me one time for playing Closing Time at Humphrey Street, one of my first
shifts. Oh my gosh,
shifts.
I hated that.
And it was like very funny, but Trey did not want to have any piece of that.
Bro, no way.
I sing it anyways, so. If
get original, Parker. Get original.
Well, guys, for my grind, my burrs, to get off the custies just a little bit, because, you know, custies deserve a lot of grief. But you know who else deserves a lot of grief are those stinking closers. And one of the things that has been grinding my burrs is, you know, when you come in the morning and there's like just enough cups stacked upstairs to where the person who was closing could justify not restocking. But you know good and well it's not going to make you all the way through rush. And so you have to go downstairs and do the restocking yourself.
The cups, man.
The cups kill me every time.
The lids kill me because you think, like, they won't notice the lids.
They won't notice the lids.
They won't notice the lids, but we do.
Oh, yeah.
Every time.
Oh, God. That is good, Parker. That's a good grinds my burrs.
Humanity. You know what grinds my burrs?
Tell us.
Is when people who don't work the bar regularly, but do have some authority over you, get on your case. When you had a clean track record with previous employers, you've been working your hardest, and past employers can only say nice things about you. But when you close, they will find anything to mark as a negative in your clothes, like a droplet of coffee on a stack of saucers, or a mop turned the wrong way, like turned up instead of, or turned down instead of upside down, which is, at least in the US, health and safety measurements is a no-no. And they will literally treat you and watch you on cameras and treat you like you are the spawn of Satan in their coffee shop.
You're totally
you might make good coffee, but you
even though you're
all of health and safety.
Yes, even though you're one of the most responsible baristas on staff and one of the most serious people, they will treat you like a child. That's what grinds my burrs.
Mm. Barely.
David,
come on.
What grinds your burrs?
I know it's hard to be mean.
Oh, it's not hard at all. You've got the wrong Canadian, buddy.
Nick's just so overly nice, even with her grinds my burrs.
So let's go. Like, I'll go like spicy because it happened this week. I've got a lot of grind my burrs. I don't have enough grinders. But what grind my burrs in the last 10 days are white bros coffee influencers on Instagram.
Ooh.
Bullshit. We should honestly, like, we should have an episode just on that if you're down the road. I can co-host it, but
let's go. Come on. But
anyway, somewhere in January to start the new year, I said a bit what we were going to talk about, which rabbit hole on Instagram, whatnot. And I just had this one slide that I recently reposted, and I had, and it was a big account. Like, I can't remember. I think it was like Coffee Props or something. And somehow they have like 120K followers. So there was like a lot of discussions and like about this one thing that I said. And all I said is coffee should be about coffee farmers before coffee influencers. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
I think it's not, I think it's not too controversial. I thought it was okay. But there are some white bros that were just like not okay with that shit, like at all. They were not down. And I had one DM, and it made me laugh and cry at the same time. It made me cry because I had to read it, and like it was kind of a waste of my time. And all that person was saying is that they were like fighting the good fights for farmer and everything. So something that I did that made me sad is I scrolled 3 months worth of that person's posts. And the word farmer didn't come up once in any post, 3 months worth of post. And he messaged me to say, but what about us that fight? It was not a criticism about, because if you're attacked by these statements, you should really like probably look at what you're doing and you probably feel bad. And you just, anyway, so again, I'll keep the rest for the episode we're going to do on that. But honestly, this is something that grind my burrs because all of those people, they receive free gear when they can buy it. They win contests when other people should buy it. There's like 2 weeks ago, there's a guy that won a niche grinder and it's his second one. I'm just like, come on, man. You can't afford the first one and then you win a second one. So all of this kind of vibe really grinds my burrs. Like not a little bit. These like are like titanium EK burrs that are like destroyed. Like I was not like happy about that at all.
Yeah.
You put nails through your burrs.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, so that's what pissed me the most like off, like in the last, not even pissed me off, just like, you know what?
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Oh, I mean, we've got a meme maker here. I mean, we've got a famous meme page maker, so it's time. I think it's time
Yeah, that might be some good fuel for the next meme. Might get under some people's skin.
Like that latest one I sent you, where it's
yes.
Ready?
That's a good one. I'm definitely doing that one next. That's a good one. Gosh. But,
Hey guys, speaking of white coffee bros, how about I move us into our next segment where we critique some coffee?
Thanks, Parker. our white kidding. Coffee bro, our in-house white coffee bro.
Yep,
Parker.
Yep, for sure. No.
You don't count Trey because you're a ginger. You're not.
Yeah, I'm redheaded. Yeah. I'm not.
You're your own race.
Well, guys, we're getting to sip the drip on some really great coffee. This drip was chosen by our Patreon supporters.
Yes, it was.
So if you want to be a part of that conversation, part of picking our coffees, go hop on Patreon. Go check that out.
Yes. And we changed it to $5 a month for everybody.
So everybody in the club.
Change all the tiers.
Come on.
If you have one of the expensive tiers, downgrade it to $5 unless you want to support us a little extra still. But we just want to make something more approachable, something a little bit more easy for us to manage because it's kind of hard to do all the different stuff. But anyways.
Yeah. Yes. So we're drinking on a Shudisa Organic from Rabbit Hole Roasters, which is an Ethiopian natural.
David,
and
was
it really
roasted by you?
Sorry?
Was this roasted by you personally, David? Or was this roasted by, do you have like a roaster that you work
No,
for
it was, it's about like 95% of all the coffee is still roasted by me, yeah.
Gotcha.
Nice.
Wow. So these are roaster himself. Touch your hands.
Oh, yeah, everything. I selected the green coffee, sample roasted it, everything. No, I'm even lying about that. Like, we've been buying from Shundisa for 3 years now. I don't ask for samples anymore. I just, like, I want a lot of bags. It's what I say.
All of it. That's awesome. Yeah. So this is cool, too, because this is, like, our first sip the drip with the roaster present for it, which is cool.
Oh.
But
that's really cool, though. And I don't know if it's about... That's another thing that, like, this doesn't grind my burrs, just a fact. Before I go on another rant, it's just, like... People sometimes, I don't know if it's because of like Instagram, is because like of our vibe of like some really nice pictures that were not taken by me because I'm a terrible photographer. People think that we're like, that we have like 17 employees and we have like an HR department. Like we're two owners like that works.
Right.
And we just have our first employee. She's been with us for like 3 months now. So we're still a very small operation. So.
I figured because I saw your post with her, and so I thought, oh, maybe she's the one roasting now. But okay,
yeah, and just like my business partner Sophie, like she can also roast, but the thing is like there's like a bunch of things that she's doing that I'm terrible at, and I'm also like a more experienced just coffee person, so she roasts quite more and more now because our volume is increasing, so that's good. But like I still enjoy the roasting. So I'm the like green buyer, master roaster, like I sweep the floors, you know, like we do it all.
A true small business. I understand that.
I did
I work in a small business myself, but sorry, Parker, we didn't mean to hijack you.
No, you're good.
The script, Trey.
I know. I get excited. I'm sorry. I get excited.
Well, how about we talk about some of the initial thoughts on the coffee? What were y'all thinking when you were sipping the drip?
You can be honest, even if I'm here.
Okay. It's terrible. I'm just kidding.
It tastes like rabbit hair.
bad connection. I have a bad connection.
I'm breaking up. I'm sipping it right now, live on the podcast. And honestly, I'm getting way more of a sweet touch to it than I thought I would. I mean, it's floral, of course. It's beautifully floral. But I'm getting way more of like a, I don't know, I didn't want to say honeycomb kind of feel, but something sweet on that front, way more than I thought I would. At the end of the day, I mean, this coffee is interesting. It's not your average Ethiopian. I would say it's even not your average Guji. You know, it's definitely unique, I would say, for an Ethiopian. I wasn't expecting it to taste like it was. Like when Parker handed it to me, I immediately looked at it, you know, of course, tasting notes. But I had a question about the varietal stuff, because I'm still trying to learn a lot about varietals, because that's kind of a thing that I just never cared to know about. But I wanted to know more about these varietals. Now, I don't know if the varietal is a French word or that's the actual way you pronounce it. But this Gibberina 74110 and the Serta 74112, like, I don't know much about those varietals, but I would figure that would be a reason why this Ethiopian Anguji doesn't taste like your average Ethiopian. Like, to me, it's way more floral and way more non-fruity sweet than most Ethiopians. And so, David, I kind of wanted to know more about that personally. Yeah. About the varietals.
Yeah. To be honest, like, I'm not a specialist on like Ethiopian varietals, but the thing is, like, in Ethiopia, like, if you just take, let's say, just like the Americas, for example, yeah, there's probably like, I don't even know, but maybe like 50, 60 varietals that like are cultivated over and over again. But if you just go in Ethiopia, there's going to be like thousands that are not identified. Oh. And it's just like in the high thousands. Some people say up to like 6,000. Like,
that's amazing.
It's crazy amount of varietals. It's just because it was not really organized for like such a long time, for like centuries, right? So it was just like a small lot that would grow in one forest, and then it would spread to another forest with like different rainfall, whatever it is. So anyway, so these days I think they're trying to identify a little bit more of those varietals. But again, it's like there's so many. So this, I don't know if it's true, because I have multiple talks with like importers and with producers, but I think this one has to do with like either the region or like the farm or like the community. And then they just give it a number just to try to differentiate it, because there are so many different varietals. So this is kind of like a system, but don't take like this word for it, just because I'm not, even myself, I keep reading. I just received a book about like all the Ethiopian coffee varietals. It's a very small book, but anyway, so I'm going to get to that. It's a good opportunity to research this a bit more. But when it comes to the taste profile, though, this I can speak a little bit more on that. And it's a couple of reasons, I think, why it's a bit maybe sweeter or like less, let's just say like a blueberry balm or something like that, that we can have usually. First of all, the person that processed the coffee, his name is Ture Waji, and he runs a Suku Coffee, and he really is like literally like a wizard processing the naturals. He is so knowledgeable and so good, and I don't even know how like he does it, but it's just pure flowers. When I receive the green, it's just like, it's really just like a bouquet. It's just so aromatic. But then when it comes to roasting, like, I really, like, one of my fears when I was starting to roast coffee was underdeveloped coffees. I think this is the worst thing. I will take any dark roast coffee over an underdeveloped Ethiopian or Kenyan or whatever, like, all day, all my life. Like, maybe I don't think I'm alone, you know? So I started to just, like, when I started to roast, I really went, like, a bit darker than, like, what was, like, the average for specialty. And then I kind of refined it when we switched roasters because I had a bit more control. So we started on Probat. Now we have a Loring. And the Loring is like, yeah, it's like crazy expensive, but like you don't have like, to, you don't need an afterburner after. So anyway, the cost overall is kind of the same as a Probat. But I really think that the development of the inner bean with the Loring, at least for me, like personally, and the way I roast coffee as well. So I roast coffee incredibly fast. So most people would do like an 80% capacity batch in, I don't know, let's say 10 minutes, 11 minutes is pretty standard roasting time. I do 90, 92% capacity in like 7 minutes, 30 seconds, 8 minutes. Cool. So that's pretty much how I roast. Not all the coffees, but whenever I want a coffee that's going to keep the flow roast, keep the delicacy, but I really don't want this to taste like hay or straw or anything like that. So I'm going to roast with this kind of style. So when I roast fast, it allows me to go to like a darker color. But because it was so fast, I keep a little bit more of like this acidity in the floral notes. So at least on the profile, this is what I try to accomplish with this coffee. I have maybe like four other coffees that I roast kind of in the same style. But the Shundisa is really what like opened my eyes to the fact that like it was possible. And what's beautiful about coffee is that I roasted a fast batch by mistake one day and it was so good. Mm-hmm. And I kept investigating. So I hope it answers your question, but
yeah,
mistakes are good. Kinda, I like that.
That's been the biggest deal with like, I'm trying to understand what's happening new in the coffee world. Cause to me, I'm such a barista on the barista front and yeah. I've never wanted to compete. I've never cared about being the smartest coffee person in the room. I've cared about being the most hospitable and being that's the best good. To our customers. And so to me, like I need a varietal is the one thing about coffee that I was never really taught and I want to understand more about. And that's the thing with Ethiopia, like you saying there's thousands of them and people are starting to try to give them names. I mean, that's going to be huge down the line. I mean, that's what the next thing that's going to make coffees different on the front line of roasting. And so when I'm buying coffees from my shops, I'm not going to just be thinking, oh, we need these countries. I'm going to be like, well, you know, these varietals are something that I'm really digging that I think would be great. So it gets a little deeper in information. But I love it, man. Like that sweet lavender touch is just nice. It's a breath of fresh air from a lot of the roasters that at least I'm trying in the area. And so, and I'm pumped to try more, man. I'm pumped to have more in my gullet.
All right. Yeah. That's good.
It's insane. Like, I'm always like really excited when I see a coffee that has like a certain tea, like lavender or Earl Grey in the notes. Cause I try not to pay too much attention to notes, but I mean, and I'm always skeptical. I'm always like, okay, set your expectations aside and just like try a coffee for what the coffee is. But it was like, as I was like pouring, you know, my doing my bloom and everything and like adding more water, it's like I could just smell lavender in my nose. It was insane to me. Like, it's just one of the cool things about coffee is like, you know, like how like you can, it's this one thing, but it can taste and smell like something completely different. It's just amazing.
I agree with that. And that's why recently we switched on our bags. Instead of saying tasting notes, we write impressions.
First of all,
because it's the same.
I like that way more.
It's the same spelling in French and English. So it, because our labels are bilingual. So that's really nice for us.
Yeah.
But also is because usually I'm going to do one brew and one cupping. So like, let's say one V60 and one cupping of coffee. That's going to be maybe too fresh, maybe like, and you know, it's so hard to just like tell people, like, if you don't taste the lavender, might as well throw this bag in the garbage. It's not what we're about. It's because to me, I don't know, maybe you and I were exposed to more lavenders growing up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you never smelled it before, like, my business partner is allergic to strawberries. So when I say it tastes like strawberries, she just, like, she cannot relate to that, you know? And Trey, you mentioned, like, it tastes a bit like honeycomb to you. And I don't disagree with that. But for me personally, I would label this as, like, sponge candy, probably. Mm. Just because I ate, like, a ton of that growing up. And it just reminded me of that instantly, so.
That's the cool thing too about coffee is like a lot of the tasting, it can be based on your background growing up. I forget who it was, but somebody was working on a more of a like black African-American tasting wheel based on things that a lot of black people here in America are familiar with in their tasting of things. So like, and they made their own like spin off of it. I can't, oh, like, does anyone remember
who it was?
It was
not caffeinated enough that did that.
Yes, it was. Yes. They have a podcast. Yeah, they did that. And I was like, that is awesome because that's a cool thing. Like that's how you bridge the gap between, you know, different people of classes when it comes to coffee, is like being like, hey, like, just because you don't taste this doesn't mean you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's why I like impressions rather than tasting notes, because I feel like especially with a lot of other beverages or foods, like tasting notes is kind of implied as like, this is what you need to taste. Otherwise you're wrong. When it's like, you're not wrong. You just have, everyone has their own perspective when they approach the coffee, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's well put. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciate all the insight, David, on, your coffee. We want to know more about you. Tell us about you. We like to call it your single origin story. If you could tell us about your first sip of coffee until now, and you know, starting your roastery.
Yeah. All right. So my very first, like, when I left for like a 3-year trip, maybe like 11 years ago now, and there was no specialty coffee shop in my city at all. Like a very famous shop opened just the day before I left, and I went, I had a latte, and I was just like, I need to get out of here anyway. I'm going to the airport. So I didn't think anything of it. But then 3 years later, when I came back, like the Montreal scene was kind of like booming. And it's very unoriginal story. I had a natural Ethiopian that tasted like blueberry, like 99% of the coffee professionals, I guess. And it really struck to me because I'd always work in like bars, cocktails, and like restaurants, and all tasting is, since I was like 17, 18 years old, was always part of like almost all of my jobs, right? So then I was just like, oh, this is so cool. And about like, I'd say 2 months after, I left like a huge restaurant group where I was making good money for someone that never been to school. And it was maybe not the smartest move, but like, I was so happy to go work like in a cafe. And then I just kind of learned from there and like worked like tons of like barista shifts. And, but I was always curious, like, it's really rare that I can stay at the same job for like more than a year. So I was always trying to see like the next level. And like, so now I knew like barista competition, so I started to compete. I met some other people, then two roasters hired me in the span of like 2 years, and I really got into that. But and when I was working with those roasters, I started to read more about origin. So it took me like a good like 3 years into coffee probably before I started to incorporate like what's it like kind of like at origin. I was so new trying to learn everything I could about latte art, dialing in espresso, customer service in cafe. But I was coming from bars and restaurants, so the hospitality one was kind of the same, but just with nice, not drunk coffee people in the morning. So that was a nice switch. And then when I really started to learn a little bit more about how roasters could have kind of an impact at origin, I started to try to implement that with the roasters I was working for, and it was not working out. Like they had like no interest because their bottom lines were like, and they were not like bad people, to be really fair. It's not that they didn't want to change. It's just like when you've been operating for like 7 years, 10 years, you have X amount of employees, your margins are based on like whatever price you pay for like your blender coffee and whatnot. And so I left. I did just like a little bit of like gigs here and there just to like be able to pay the bills while I was working on putting Rabbit Hole together. And I just wanted to start fresh and incorporate all of like kind of higher cost coffee, not necessarily for the consumer, but maybe a little bit more on average than other roasters, but like mostly for us, and like really build our margins with like fair prices kind of like in mind. And yes, we had like a cheaper coffee in the beginning and whatnot, but now like we really went like full-fledged. We just want to really dive deep into like origin and try to make an impact with like our green, I call them our green dollars, but like a green coffee dollar. I guess money is always green, but you know. So that, like, in a nutshell, it's pretty much kind of what I wanted to do with Rabbit Hole, and more now we're like even more engaged, and we're trying to find ways to just like reinvest in different projects. And that's what we're gonna keep doing, because if there's no farmers, there's no coffee. It's like the most obvious statement, but it's easy, because coffee is always seen as like this exotic product that's, and like we're in Canada, right? But at least like me and Nick, and I'm like, for most consumers, coffee that's grown in Mexico or in Papua New Guinea is the same thing. They don't care about the context, you know, because it's an exotic product, whatever that means, you know? And we're just trying to put it forward that like it's not, and like farmers should be having like more decisional power. They should be able to have it just like a living wage, you know, like just like the basics, you know? So we're really trying to build our own projects and join other projects that other people have built, just so that you buy coffee to stay in business, because we do need green coffee as a roaster, but then you join something that's bigger than coffee, which is like our motto, that's really like beyond coffee. That's what we're trying to do.
Definitely. That's awesome. So what would you say have been some of the ways that you've helped, you know, bridging the gap between, you know, those consumers that, like you said, don't know anything between, like, to them, a Mexico and a Papua New Guinea, same thing. How have you kind of, what are some ways you, as a company, have tried to bridge the gap between, you know, the origin and the consumer?
That's still a work in progress, to be honest. I'm still trying to, like, find ways to talk about, like, origin to the consumer. But I think that the first step, at least for me personally, was to really know as much as I could about the origin and really build those projects, because we can all kind of talk about, yeah, we need to pay farmers more. But what does it mean, you know? Because paying farmers more in Yunnan and paying farmers more in Guatemala is not the same thing, you know? The rules are different, the governments are different, the needs are different, you know? So what I'm really working on now is really build those relationships. And once the relationships are going to be really solid, then I'll try to talk more about like those stories, but like not the story to just like, oh, look at me, like I'm a white savior. I just did this for the farmers. It's going to be kind of like this thing where I can really show, hey, look, this is what we've been doing. And I think that this year so far, the most kind of impactful thing we did to open the consumer's eyes to what we're trying to do. So our most, it's not a good term, I think, but our most direct relationship is in Yunnan. We've been buying from them for 4 harvests now. So every single harvest we could since we opened Rabbit Hole. And we started this project with like a very small farming region that's called Weiben in Yunnan. And the coffees are really good, but it's really remote and they can't produce a lot because they have to sell almost everything on the local market, right? So we did this coffee that's called Return to Origin. With the intent of, we sell it for maybe like $1.50 more than what we would have sold it if it was not Return to Origin. But we split the profits 50-50 with the farmers. So we would just like, we keep half of the profits after shipping and after production and all that. And we would put aside every single bag that we would sell, the 1 pound, 2 pound. We sold a 5 pounder of it. So it was really cool. And then we did a fundraiser to try to top the donation, because sending money to Yunnan is so complicated. It's really not easy because there's so many rules. You need to be like a Chinese like citizen or a business operating with another Chinese business. Anyway, it's super super complex. But anyway, so, and we did this. So we explained a little bit why we want to do this. We are working with a super talented writer and photographer. His name is Charles. He's super knowledgeable in like writing and all things about like not coffee origin, but like things outside of like Canada as well. People reacted really well to it. We still sell, not like as much as earlier, but like we really sell a lot, and like we keep raising money for that. And what's also important for the consumer part is that the consumer tends to need something like tangible that they can really grasp. Like, so I'm raising money and it's like, oh, so you're going to send half the money to the farmers. I think that should be enough, but they want to know what the money is going to be put, like, used for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in this particular case, it was super easy. Personally, I don't care if they use that money to send their kids to school, to build new roads, to buy a car, whatever they need for the community, right? Yeah. But for this particular project, it's a project that was already on the way, and they needed $6,000 to complete their drying installations. And then in about 3 months, we could raise like $1,000. So they were at like 4,500, so we gave 1,000. So they only had $500 to go to complete the full project. And if they couldn't do it, it was 3 installations, $2,000 each. So even if like our $1,000 could not reach like the threshold to complete the project, they would just have waited for the return to origin to sell more. And then we would just like do it the next year for the last one, you know? So right. People reacted extra well because it was like, it sounds good. Let me read them. Oh, okay, they're splitting the profit. So that's why I'm paying a bit more for my coffee. But then they're doing something super specific. So now with the drying installation, the coffee is going to be tastier. So we're going to be paying more for the coffee. And then what they don't sell to us, they're going to be selling more because now they have the proof that they can show a contract from us how much we paid. And they're going to show it to other buyers. So the price is going up, up, up and up for them. And that's where the cycle is kind of like breaking of just paying peanuts, you know? So
that's so cool.
There's still like a lot of things to talk about when it comes to Yunnan, but also, like I said, like until 3 months ago, it was just me and Sophie, and like we have like a writer that has other obligations as well. So sometimes it's just a matter of like if we have a big week, then I can't talk about that because I'm also a father of two. I love to not work 60 hours a week, and we need to roast the coffee, fulfill the orders first. And then we work on like those extra projects. But now we're going to really double down on this summer. And then we're going to hire more people now. And we are going to be able to just like put up a bunch more content so that people can kind of relate to what we're doing. And they know where their money is going as well. So like the consumer also wants to know where the extra dollar is going. That was a very long story. Sorry. But like I'm very passionate about this project. So
that's the point. We want people to hear these stories because, you know, like, somebody's got to tell them, and it's best to hear it from the people behind them. So you know, as a roaster, you know, you guys started in 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then went through, of course, well, everyone's been going through the last year and a half, a global pandemic, and then now we're kind of finally ushering into normalcy again. So, you know, what have been the main challenges for you guys as a business this last, you know, 2+ years?
Honestly, the first 2 months were really the hardest, just because, first of all, we didn't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? How long is it going to last? Also, we just like on a pure business standpoint, we used to give way too much credit for a consumer to our customers, way too much credit before they paid us. So now pandemic hits, everybody shut their door anyway. So we had almost all of our cash flow tied to them, and some paid us like, so pandemic hit in like, what, March? Some finished paying us in like November. So it was kind of rough to start the pandemic because we had like very little cash flow. Also, our wholesale went from whatever it was to 0% in a week. So that was, there was not like, let me see what happens. I'm going to order. It was full-fledged from 100% to 0% in about like 10 days, I'd say. That was pretty wild. But besides that, there's one thing that I know is that people will drink coffee. Pandemic, not a pandemic. Like if zombies are there, people are going to seek coffee at some point in their lives. They don't care. You're going to need to drink the beans, you know? So like our web shop now, but as soon as like the pandemic started, we stopped everything because we had like a lot of free time, right? No wholesale. So we redid our website from scratch, optimized subscription as fast as we could. And then we doubled down on Instagram, article content and whatnot on the website. And this really, really helped us out. And as soon as the site was finished and everything, hired a photographer, hired a writer in Charles, and we redid the website a second time 4 months after, like way more professionally. And after that, it was just just really online. And after the first 2 months, we could see like a huge increase in just like subscription and whatnot. So that was really good. And we're just like glad that we could like act fast. And like, we didn't have to worry about rent because we were roasting out of a roasting co-op. We didn't have to worry about employees because there was no employee. We didn't have to worry about opening hours or nothing like that. So that was that was also like a big advantage if we compare to roasters that have 1, 2, 3 or up to 5 cafes in Montreal. It was way rougher for them than it was for us.
Definitely,
at least.
Yeah. That's amazing. And I just want to say, I mean, yeah, the website, it works beautifully. It looks beautiful. The Instagram, it's worth following, y'all. If you're listening, check out Rabbit Hole. And also, just you can't beat these bags are just awesome. Like, I've just been like, once this hit my doorstep, I was just showing all my friends, like, look how amazing and beautiful these bags are. And I mean, it just is great coffee, you know, from origin to roast to my doorstep. I mean, just as good coffee inside of the bags too, which is awesome.
Thank you, man.
Of course.
And David, just a last quick question here to wrap it up. What do we have to expect from Rabbit Hole in the future? Like, what do we have on the horizon to look forward to?
Oh, like, we're going to probably continue kind of like in the same direction. But like I said, we had like mostly Yunnan as kind of like a big project origin. Now we're gonna shift this to like probably Kenya if we can. So we have Kenyan coffees landing in 3 weeks from a Vava coffee. The coffees are delicious. We also just finished a contract, signing a contract with like a Semilla coffee, which is an importer based in Montreal. And they work with in different origin, but like in Guatemala. They work with like a resistance group, and they're also coffee farmers to like oppose like a mine that's like operated like illegally in like an indigenous community there. So we're just gonna keep buying from like projects that are like doing more and more. But also, we really want to. Now is gonna be the time to reach more consumers, because now my head is straight about what we're doing at Origin. I understand it and I can kind of like vehiculate that message to others, because if I don't understand what's happening there, it's hard to talk about it in like in a way that makes sense. So now we're just looking at other avenues, and it's probably gonna be like maybe a bit of like, I don't like to call it a podcast, but maybe like audio bits, something that we've never done before. And also maybe kind of like a YouTube channel, but not a YouTube channel, just like, if you use below 16:1, you're going to hell. It's not going to be that type of like YouTube channel. Yeah. So it's going to be a little bit more kind of like engaged. Yeah, some tasting and some brewing, but like also making coffee more. I think if we can find a way to make coffee more accessible, then more people are going to see what we do in those origins. So it's kind of like... This is a very poor explanation. I apologize for this. But because I know more what's happening at Origin, we're just going to try to make the consumer even more engaged with what we've been doing kind of right now. And that's going to be our big goal for, let's say, like until the end of the year. And yeah. I'm not doing it alone again. So like Sophie, my business partner, and mostly Charles with like the photography and like the writing. As you can see, when I start like talking like that, I need help putting this on paper. And so those two are like really, really helping me out beautifully. Like kind of try to put my thoughts together. So, and also you can expect tasty coffees, I hope, like, you know, so we have a couple of other origins coming in, maybe Timor-Leste, Papua New Guinea is going to be landing. We have big projects in Yemen as well. And yeah, we're trying to do a lot at the same time, but that's really, really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, well, if they're anywhere near as good as the Shindisa, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely.
It's going to be great. Definitely can't wait to drink more down the line. Well, David, merci, my friend. So glad you could join us.
Such a busy. I'm
not only a Canadian, but a bona fide French Canadian at that.
There you go.
But we're so happy you could join us. I mean, so much fun information. And yeah, I mean, we're already talking during this conversation. We've already started typing each other like, we need to do more with roasters. We need to do more like with passionate people that are in the roasting world that are passionate about the farmers too. But to our listeners listening in, to you, just so y'all know, we are taking a 3-week break to kind of, you know, classic what we do, our quarterly little 3-week break that we usually do. We're also, we're going to get ready for a Beniagram mini-series coming out starting next month. So that's going to be super exciting. Really excited about that. More in-depth to the Beniagram, y'all. I know all you Enneagram freaks out there love it. I love it. We're going to make a book, 2 books, and you're going to be able to tell people. You're going to be able to tell people knowing the Beniagram. You're going to be like, well, you can't categorize yourself. Yeah. You have to read the books.
When you go to coffee shop interviews, they're going to be like, what are you on the Beniagram?
Beniagram. And kind of we're trying to figure out the details, y'all. But yeah, we've been talking about a live show on this podcast for almost a year. And guys, we've been talking some details. We're trying to figure out a Nashville live show / latte art throwdown coming in a few months. You know, guys, we're coming up on a year of this podcast being a thing real quick. And starting from our first little test recording to, you know, this year. So you guys be on the lookout for cool things in the future. David, again, merci, my friend. This was great. Such a fun conversation. And this is the Socialish Barista Podcast.